This is Melinda Broughton. We are in 803 Columbia Street in Hudson, New York. I'm sitting with Hasnada Kader. Mm-hmm. This is for the Oral History Summer School run by Susan Snyder. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Hasnada Kader, and I am going to give some history about a button factory in Hudson.
Before we get to the subject of the button factory, could you tell me a little bit about where you come from?
I came from Bangladesh in 1994, and I have two children. And my husband went back to Bangladesh, so that's my family. Presently, I'm living here by myself, my sons, one in New York, one in Albany.
Where in Bangladesh did you grow up?
I grew up in a village. In Bangladesh, they call district, not a state. So district called Rangpur, and another subdivision called Gaibandha, and the village name is Bharatkali. And after that, when I finished my high school, I went to the second largest city in Bangladesh. That's a port city called Chittagong. I went to college there. So I finished my two-year college, and from there I went to another city called Dinajpur. I started my four-year college there. And at that time I got married. And after my marriage, I went to the capital city, Dhaka, and finished my four-year degree.
Could we backtrack and just could you tell me a little bit about your childhood? Or is there a specific part of your history in Bangladesh that you would like to talk about?
History about Bangladesh, I like to talk about our independence war, where I was in 10th grade. We got independent from Pakistan. We were Pakistan before, the Bangladesh was East Pakistan, and Pakistan was West Pakistan. Before that, we were part of the Indian subcontinent. Pakistan got independence from the Indian subcontinent in 1947 because of the religious reason. East Pakistan was, which is Bangladesh, was part of the Pakistan. Even though we have 1,000 miles geographical gap in between. So, and we speak Bangla, and Pakistani people speak Urdu. There are clash in on the language, and Pakistan, most of the time Pakistani people was ruling East Pakistan. They're not giving any position to Bangladeshi people. So all that reason, and in 1971 our leader Sheikh Mujibur Rahman declared the independence of Bangladesh. And another reason, he was owned in majority vote. Still Pakistan was not giving him the power. So finally he declared independence. After 9 months of war, we got our independence in 1971 in December. He declared the independence in March 26th.
Where were you when he declared independence?
I was in my village, and so everyone basically helped or fought for the war. We had like guerrilla war. So everyone fought against the Pakistani army. After 9 months of war, we got our independence.
How old were you at that time?
I was 16.
You were 16. Mm-hmm. And
Actually, I was 15.
15?
Mm-hmm. 15.
How did that 9 months affect your daily life?
It affected daily life for all Bangladeshi people. People had to leave their job, people had a school are closed, and we had a camp close to in our school, the Pakistani camp. So they were going to village, if they have any young girls or women, they rape them, they burn people's house. So we had to hide each time that if as if there are no women in that household, who didn't go out or anything. So that was, that 9 months was really, really terrible time for all Bangladeshis. And for that reason, I couldn't, our school is 10 years, so I supposed to finish my high school that year, I couldn't. So I had to take the exam following year, and I finished my high school.
Did you stay in that village?
I stayed in that village for 9 months, but whenever there was a fight in between guerrilla fighter and the Pakistani army, we had to go in a very, very remote area. We walked there, took our emergency. We always get our like suitcase ready. Each one had to carry something just to survive somewhere. So we had to go a very remote area where they cannot find us.
Who did you usually...
Distance relative, or we know people, friend who lives in a remote area. And when it get, everything gets a little settled, we come back again to our own house.
And how did you usually know that it had settled down?
So people would know that they are going and they are taking young men and shooting them. And people, it's mouth, word of mouth and news. We all always carry our radio with us so we can hear the news, what's going on, where.
Is there a specific experience from that time period that you hold very deeply?
I lost one of my cousin and one of my uncle during that war, and my brother went to guerrilla fight. He went for training, and that was a terrible time for us. Every day we were thinking about, oh, this is going to be a bad news coming soon, because Bangladeshi fighter doesn't have enough materials or things to fight against the Pakistani. They are trained, and these are regular people fighting against them. Mm-hmm. So lots of Bangladeshi people got killed, and every single day our family was like always terrified when it must be coming in bad news. So thankfully nothing happened to my brother, but my cousin was bystander when they had a fight, so he got killed. And one of my uncle went to CT and he never came back. So we don't know what happened to him, he never came back. So these two. But many, many women got raped, and they have, after that, like in Bangladesh, it's a very bad thing having raped or having physical activity before marriage. So those women has terrible right. Even though government take action, took care of them, they have shelter for them and those children who grow out of this, right? Who was born out of this rape. Mm-hmm. So that is like a history, a bad history that I still holding.
Mm-hmm. What did it mean for you as a 15, turning into a 16-year-old, to get your independence?
That was very joyful for us, because no one is ruling us anymore. Now we can have the, like, even though Bangladeshi people have qualification and all the mill factories, everything they are doing, and all the development work all happening in Pakistan, nothing happening in Bangladesh. So even though I was 15, 16, we were very, very happy about that we got our independence. Now we can, like, even I am not eligible, my brothers or my cousin, my uncle, they can have some position, they can have the better opportunities.
And was continuing your education a large opportunity? I mean, you went to, I mean, in the sense that you went to, you seem to have gone to so many different cities.
That is not really about independence. If you wanted to have education, they could. It depends on your how your family outlook is. Some people think it's not important. Education is not important for women. They can have little education, and after marriage, they can raise their children. That's their job. But some family has that importance of education. So.
And education held an important role in your family?
Yes, yes. My father is. My father was educated among whole few villages. He got the high school diploma. He's the first one. People came to see him. That he got the high school diploma, and he really put his emphasis on education for everybody in our family. We are 13 brothers and sisters, and they all have higher education. Only sisters doesn't have higher education because back then it was hard for women and girls to send to school, and I am the youngest girl in the family, so I had that opportunity for higher education, but my sisters didn't, but all my brothers have high education.
How many sisters and how many brothers of the 13?
13, four sisters and nine brothers.
Wow. And did you guys, are you guys close enough in age that you guys went off to higher education together?
Yes. We are 2 years, 2.5 years apart. We use same book, 3-4 of my sister, one graduating and next person coming and using the same book. Mm-hmm. We use same book. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of subjects were really important to you during your higher education?
For me, I didn't really choose any. Thus, I just wanted my degree. It's called pass course in Bangladesh. We have honors course and also have pass course. Pass course is combined 2-3 subject. I had pass course. For my bachelor's, I have economics, Islamic history, and social welfare. But I put emphasis on social welfare, and all my life I'm working on that field.
Social affair?
Social welfare.
Welfare. Mm-hmm. And did you come to that on your own accord, or was there a specific teacher that really influenced you to take up social welfare?
As I said, I took four, all combined 3 courses, same, but I got the job. Social welfare field attract me, so I kept working in that field. I like to work with people, so mm-hmm. I'm working in that field, human service field. Social welfare is kind of human service. Mm-hmm.
And did you work in social welfare while living in Bangladesh, or did you...
Not directly social welfare, but in human service field, like social research field I actually worked. How can develop some certain things? So I collected data. I was interviewer in Bangladesh. When I worked, my first job was family planning prevention, family planning program. I was a motivator / field worker. Uh-huh. So back then people didn't realize the benefit of using contraception. So that was my first job. I did that for about 2 years. After that I went to a research, social research. That job was how to develop government family planning program to help them technical support. The research was for giving them technical support to develop government family planning programs.
So what would that look like? Like what, could you give me an example of some type of family planning that you helped? It was...
Like in the family planning was, we serve people who ever needed the family planning services. Mm-hmm. We encouraged them to do the using contraceptive or taking. So we helped them, referred them, those kind of things. And we also give them supply, like contraceptive pills, condom. Mm-hmm. And if someone needed clinical service, we took them with us and referred them to a clinic. So that's how I helped them. Mm-hmm. That was first job. Second job was the research, how people can, what step we can take to make the government service better. Mm-hmm. The research for that.
How big of a team was that? How many colleagues did you have on working on those type of projects?
The first job we had, I think, 10 field workers. Mm-hmm. So we divided the area, this area, you covered this area, you covered this area. That's how we, every day we did home visit. Mm-hmm. And talk to people who needs work, why, what is suitable for her or him to use. And we encourage them, this is not good for you, like injections, it's not good for everybody. You rather do have the other options. So we lay out the options in front of them, which is, they can choose their own.
And how old were you at that time?
About 30 years old. Mm-hmm. About 30 years, yeah.
And when did you move to...
To USA?
Yeah.
When I was 38 years old, I moved to USA.
So what happened between when you were 30 and 38? Were you still in... So you were still...
Yeah, working in Bangladesh, yes.
For the same...
No. I worked there only 2 years. Then I went to that research field, I said. Mm-hmm. I worked there, and I think I'm mixing up. I didn't work in 30. I wasn't 30 then. I think I was a little older than that. I didn't work there that long in Bangladesh. About altogether maybe 5-6 years I worked there. So maybe 32 or 33, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is there anything else within your time in Bangladesh that you feel is really formative for your historical narrative? Like, is there anything that happened within... in your 30s there?
No, I don't think so.
So then what was the drive to come to the United States?
My brother came to United States long time ago. So he applied for us for a family visa. When I got our family visa, about two years, all debated, should we go, should we not go, should we not go. American life is better life, with people think it's a land of opportunity. So one hand we are thinking about that, other hand we are thinking, what I have here, I am established, my husband has a government job, I had a job, should we go. I actually came 1993 just to... and analyze the situation. Mm-hmm. I stayed here 3 months and then I went back. I think it's too hard life in America.
What made you feel that way?
You are doing everything by yourself. In Bangladesh, if you have a okay job, you can maintain a servant or job distribution. But in America, I saw old people are doing their old grocery. I felt so bad for them. if I come here, I have to do the same. I cannot do that. I want back. And like shoveling your own snow, doing your mowing your lawn, everything. In Bangladesh, people don't really do, like some people do. Whoever is have a job, they're not doing everything by themselves. They can. I didn't have a huge, high-paying job in Bangladesh. I had a maid servant, a help at home. So that I went back, and my son graduated from high school, and he wanted to study in America. So my husband was going to send him by himself. I said, no way, I'm not sending a 16-year-old in America by himself. So in 3 days, I changed my mind, came back again, 1994.
And what made him really want to study in the United States?
In Bangladesh, we are really, really overpopulated. Even though you have higher education, it's hard to get jobs. Many, many people are unemployed, and high competition. And so he thought, if we go to America, get a degree from America, even though we come back in Bangladesh, I can have a job. An American degree is recognized everywhere. So he said, oh, I want to study in America. And we didn't have that much money to send him to America just for studying. So I said, we have the opportunity, we have the immigration, let's go.
So how many, so it was you, your husband, and your son who came over, or more?
Both sons, and my other three brothers actually got immigration at the same time. One brother living in Florida, one in New York. Another brother came few years, went back, he let his green card go. He has really, really good job in Bangladesh, so he decided not to. He came here, he sent his daughter, got her degree, she went back too. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really care about American green card or the citizenship.
Was it easy or hard to get a green card?
If you come through a proper channel, my brother applied, he is a citizen. It takes a long time, but it's not hard. It takes about 10 years to bring your family to America if you are a citizen. Mm-hmm. So he applied for us and we came.
And where did you come first?
When you got first to time I came to Boston. Uh-huh. And Logan Airport. My brother lives in Sharon, Massachusetts. I lived there, and another brother was in New Rochelle, New York, who is in Florida now. So I was living there. Their children go to school, they go to work, and all day I was feeling, that time I didn't bring any of my family with me, just myself. So all day I felt so lonely and homesick. So in 1 week I make up my mind. I said, I'm not staying, I'm going back to Bangladesh. My brother said, no, you shouldn't come then. Why did you come? So I tried 3 months, went to other brother's house, stayed, and went here, there. Still, I couldn't stay. I went back to Bangladesh.
So that was a really challenging time.
Mm-hmm. Because I was missing my children so much, plus my country and everything, my job, everything back in Bangladesh I was missing. I was looking for a job here, door to door. Oh, I'm looking for a job. I feel so bad. I had a good in an international agency, I had a job there. International research organization, I had that job. And from that, I'm going door to door, asking for any job. I felt so bad, so I went back. So I felt like I'm begging for a job.
And in that point, were there language barriers, or
even though I had English, because I worked for an international organization, my pronunciation, people didn't understand me, I didn't understand them well, because American accent, and we learned the English way, so it was different. And of course, Bangladeshi, I have a different accent, so that was the hard part, like understanding people.
And what was when your son came? Did he have an easy transition? Did he, or what was his transition?
He has English too. He is a really good student. At the beginning of school, he had little trouble, not much though, not much. Easy transition. Yeah, it was easy.
And same with your husband?
No, my husband still couldn't do the transition. That's why he is in Bangladesh. He came here, he had a government job. He came here after 2 years when I came. His written English is very good, but his spoken English is not good. He's not fluent. He couldn't get any job, any office or anywhere. So he worked in a factory a few months, and there he got new knee problem. He couldn't work. So after 2 years, he didn't really leave his job back in Bangladesh. He went back and worked there again, finished his job up to retirement. He came here, stayed 5 years, got his citizenship, went back again. It's almost 5 years. He really didn't work here much because of language barrier, his physical. He cannot do the physical work because he didn't do any physical work back in Bangladesh. I think he still didn't transit from Bangladesh to here.
Does he come back and forth still?
I went twice. He didn't come really. I went twice.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed in Boston. Is that where your son also?
Sharon, Massachusetts. My brother. No, my son didn't go to school there. My son came here a second time when I came. And went to Hudson High School, finished Hudson High School here. And he went to John Fisher College in Rochester. Uh-huh. And he went there 1 year and he realized, oh, I'm away from home. Why am I staying in a small city? I'd rather go to New York. So he moved to New York. He went to school in City University in New York. He finished his bachelor's, master's there. He's working on his PhD now.
In what?
In political science. He did his bachelor's in economics, but he changed his mind. Oh, it's a boring subject. He doesn't want to teach that subject he doesn't like all his life. He wants to be a college teacher. That's his goal. So he's doing PhD on his on political science.
How did you go from Massachusetts to Hudson? What brought you to Hudson?
As I said, first time I came to Boston and I was looking for a job. My brother lives in a suburb. There is no public transportation, not many rental apartments. Whoever lives there, they have their own houses. So even though first time I came, I found one or two jobs, there is no transportation, I didn't drive. All that reason, I went back to Bangladesh. Second time when I, before I came, my nephew was here. He went to another state for his, he was in college. Then he didn't start college first, he came as an immigrant too. He saw an ad in Hudson for the button factory in Bangladeshi paper that they are hiring people. So he came to Hudson and got a job. So second time when I come, he called me and say, you come to Hudson, you don't have to drive, you don't need much English, you can get a job in walking distance. So second time I came to Hudson. I went to Boston with my brother, stayed 10 days and came here. Interview, got a job, and I brought my son from my brother's house to here within a month.
Wow. And what year was that, or roughly?
94 October. That I remember. October 16th I came to Boston, 26th I start working in button factory, 10 days after I came.
And what was Hudson like in 1994?
It was like run down city, dead city, houses were broken and there are not many cars. It was like it was a dead city in 1994.
And what role did the button factory hold in a rundown city like Hudson?
They hold a big part because they brought people to Hudson. At the same time, like about 40 Bangladeshi started working in button factory. And that Bangladeshi agent, they had a Bangladeshi agent, he brought all the Bangladeshis to Hudson. They were giving people to stay somewhere and send them to the ESL class to learn English. And people came here for better life. They were working hard to get money. They bought houses. Many Bangladeshi has houses, own houses here. I cannot say only Bangladeshi developed the house, but Hudson City. Other people came to Hudson too. Antique dealers came to Hudson, developing Hudson. It is totally changed from 1994 to now.
So the antique dealers and a lot of the infrastructure mm-hmm. that we currently see mm-hmm. wasn't there in 1994?
Was there, but not many business, not many people. It was like almost dead. They just developed it. It was all houses was like broken. They fixed the houses, and now Warren Street on weekends you don't have parking. When weekend there are hardly cars on Warren Street.
Did you move to this house that we're currently in, or was it another one?
No, I was. I lived in State Street. I shared apartment with another family. Then my youngest son. I didn't bring my youngest son at first because I didn't know babysitting condition. I have to work. I brought my oldest son with me only. And after 3 months, I brought my youngest son and my nephew came. We needed bigger house. I was sharing, so I went to Warren Street. The orange building you can see, I lived there. That wasn't orange though.
Right by a lick. You lived there. We actually just went there today. Mm-hmm. Our whole class did. That's really funny.
Mm-hmm. So I lived on that orange building. That wasn't orange. I lived there 10 months and I didn't want to share apartment with people. It is hard to share. So I applied for Hudson Terrace apartment.
Where's that?
Hudson Terrace, the mm-hmm. subsidized housing by the river. Mm-hmm. I applied for those. I got the apartment and I moved there and stayed there 8 years, 8 months. And mm-hmm. I bought the house about 8 years ago. I moved here.
Could you tell me a little bit about your experience at the button factory?
At the beginning, it was very hard for me. I never did any physical work. At the beginning, it was very hard. The women mostly did the sorting job. They sorted button on the running from the running ball. They depict the defective button from the running belt. That was okay, but they were start moving people in many different departments. Some departments were very, very hard. I worked there 2 years, and I thought, I cannot take it anymore. I went to fireman's home, nursing home. I did a 3 month course, a CNA. I thought, eventually I'll go to a nursing school, maybe I go to college and get nursing, but CNA job even harder than button factory. I felt that way, at least, like lifting people, taking care of people. It was even harder physically. I couldn't do it. So, and button factory's personal manager was calling me several times. Oh, did you get any better job? You wanna come back? And that time I spoke to him and said, if you give me a specific job, one department, I'll come back. Otherwise, I'm not coming back. You are moving me department to department. It is hard. Physically, I cannot take it. So he kept his promise. He said, okay, I'll keep you in one department. So I came back, worked another 2 years in a sorting department. In 1999, I was going to a program called Literacy Volunteer, just to speak better. So that time the director of Literacy Volunteer called me and said, such and such a program coming, are you interested? Even when they're writing the grant, she was part of it. So she called me and she said, are you interested? I said, very much. So 13 years ago I got this job. This is a family. It was formerly Evenstart nationwide program.
It was what?
Evenstart. So 5 years ago we lost our federal funding nationwide. Obama closed that Evenstart program. So we are running our program privately from private funding, many different sources to get our. It's a family literacy program. I worked for this program for 13 years.
Wow. I would really like to get. I would really like to learn a lot about that. But I also think I would love to learn a little bit more about the Button Factory, if possible. And I was just wondering, how long has the Button Factory? How long was the Button Factory here in Hudson?
I think it was there for 20 years. I don't remember exact year, but it closed 2000. Button. 2000, yeah.
Do you know how many people it employed?
143 or 50, something like that. If you don't mind, you can turn it off. I can pull out the history. I have paper I written. I can pull out the paper and give you exact number.
I mean, this is a life history, so if... yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, I can just also leave this on, and we can, I can edit out the silence or whatever. If this is,
I think there is a year detail and how many people work, all the information there. I hope.
I also think it's important just to hear sort of your experience with the Button Factory.
I just pulled out and talked to Sarah that I found it, but I don't know how it is. Immigration, when I took classes, I learned this.
Wow.
I moved to the USA, that was an essay.
Really?
That was an essay I wrote for my class. What I said actually.
I moved to the USA.
What is that thing?
Is that the history? Wow.
He also an immigrant who I spoke for my history class. Okay, it was from 1986 to 2002. Oh, I gave you wrong information. 2002, the company.
But close, but you were right, 20 years, about 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much of the community did it, like on an average day when you went there, did it feel crowded? Did it feel really spacious? What was the button factory like? Like if you could maybe explain a typical day at the button factory.
It was not, it's a factory environment. It's not really crowded, but some area has like bad smell of chemical, and it's really hard. Like one department was called rot gust. They used to put chemicals in the rot, and you have to switch the chemical pouring the rot, and they put the rod in a heat, and they have the button, then they take it out and cut the slice that rod. That process was really hard. Another section was called molding. Mm-hmm. So that section also you put a chemical on a sheet of paper and then press it like that, or put another sheet of paper, press it like this, make it flat and put it in a machine, and that machine is heat the chemicals and cut the buttons in a button size. These two department was really dirty, messy, and smelly. Other sorting, I pretty much work every single department of the button factory. So fabrication was hard, busy. You are running all day, 8 hours, no non-stop. You are checking buttons, pouring unfabricated button on the hauler, coming out, you are taking them out, putting in a barrel, all day process, 21-20 machine, you are running by yourself. So that, and sound there is bothered people. People have to use earplug. And that was like fast job, but it's not messy, dusty, but not messy like other two department that has chemicals. And they have big cafeteria for people who can have their lunch. It was if the few departments came to a lunch same time, it was crowded. But they rotated the lunch time, so some department can take lunch, other department don't. They have to, someone has to be in the machine. That way the cafeteria is not overcrowded, and there was a line in front of the microwave who's going to heat their food first, because lunch time is limited. You cannot wait in the line for a long time. So that was, yeah, a little crowded, you can say, in the cafeteria. Other area is okay.
And did you have a lot of, were a lot of your social ties with people in the button factory, or...
We really didn't socialize with other Americans due to language barrier, and we didn't feel comfortable. So, as I said, there is a big group came that time. So we socialized among Bangladeshis.
And what was the Bangladeshi community in Hudson like? When did you say that pretty much a lot of the community came all at one time or over a certain period?
No, that time when I first came, that was 4 or 5 families, but mm-hmm. altogether 40 men, women, children, yeah. Altogether about 40 people. Now it is almost 500 Bangladeshis in Hudson. Like someone is bringing their families, mother, father, they are easy as soon as they get their citizenship. Some bachelor were living here, they went back, got married, they have children. They have brought their in-laws and friend, family, always coming. That time the rent was very, very low when we came. Now it went up, but it was very low. It was a good place to start your new life you didn't need that much money. Another reason I didn't stay with my brother is I said there are not many rental apartments because people have their own houses. Nothing is like living standard is different there. Mm-hmm. And maintaining that standard is not easy when you first came, moved to a country. Mm-hmm. But it was easy in Kherson. Still, I think the Kherson, same Bangladeshi in Kherson, and if you go to New York, the living standard is not same.
Mm-hmm.
It's not same. It's different. But I like it. Kherson is quiet. I have my own way to live. I like to visit New York, but I don't want to stay in New York. It's mm-hmm. too busy. People are running. I don't see people are walking. I don't like to run.
And why did the button factory close down?
I think there was a competition with China. They have easy labor in China, so they moved the button factory to China. That's why that was closed here. They still have offices some places in New York. They had factory in Manhattan first. Then they moved to Kherson, and they moved to China again.
So in 2002, they moved to China.
Mm-hmm. They have a button factory in 60th Street, Manhattan.
Wow. Do you know, were they supplying buttons?
They are supplying button all over. That was second largest button factory in the world. So far, I remember we fabricated button for Levi's, Arizona, I remember the name brand buttons we made. Yeah, name brand buttons we made.
And do you remember in 2002, when, do you remember how you first found out that the button factory was closing?
Actually, I left button factory in 1999.
Okay.
When it was closing, they had to let people know that button factory, they had a meeting, and they called me to interpret in that meeting.
Really?
Yes. I went there to interpret what's going to happen, what help they can get. Those kind of, they had a, like labor department and button factory and other few job, other few factories and who had job, like they held a job fair at Button Factory and had a meeting. So they called me to interpret. So when they called me, that only I know that it's going to be closed. What can they have? They had a meeting for that.
And what was the environment when you were translating or interpreting during that time for all of the workers at the factory? Had they been expecting it, or was it a shock?
Some of them knew, some of them didn't. Yeah, they were shocked, and they thought that people going to move away from Kherson. Only few families moved. Rest of them find job at the hospital, Walmart, some other factories in Saddam and in Philmont, other factories, they found job. And CAS was a big help. Many people got job at the CAS. So CAS closed too. Then 2 years, there are not many jobs. Then now Flanders came. People are working in Flanders.
And what's Flanders?
Flanders is a air filter factory.
How many factories do you think exist now? How much do you think of?
Many factories, but I don't know. I know Bangladeshi people work in Flanders, that air filter company. There is a big Bangladeshi population there, and Sunoco Krillin in Saddam, mm-hmm. and a plastic company in Fillmore, it used to be Novapak, they changed their name, Premier Brand or something. I'm not exactly sure what is the name of that factory. So these three, four factories has most Bangladeshi. They might have other factories, but I don't know about. But a packaging factory, Apple packaging factory, oh. Some packaging factory too.
Okay. I would love to talk to you about the literacy job that you then took after the button factory.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I'm noticing, usually my recorder goes forward in time, and it's going backwards in time, so I keep on looking down to figure out
how much time you have.
Why that's happening, because usually it goes, you know, an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30 minutes, and it's going backwards, which makes me think either we have a certain amount of time left on this recorder, or it's just doing something. Yeah, okay, it just says that there's... exactly 40 minutes left on my recorder, which should be okay. could you talk a little bit about transitioning from the button factory to the literacy job?
I was very excited to get even though I was working in a factory, always in my mind, how can I get out of this environment? Always I was thinking about it. I was taking not really classes. I contacted with Literacy Volunteer of America. She took my test and she, what do you want to learn? You have enough English. I said, yes, I like to learn like English as a professional or office working level people. I still speak broken English. I need to learn more. So she gave me a volunteer. Maybe once or twice a week, I used to go just chat with her to improve my spoken English. And government was opening a program. It's about Congressman Goodling was of his No Child Left Behind Act opened this program. The Evenster. So we were Hudson Evenster program under that act. Mm-hmm. And we were federally funded. First we got 4 years funding. He said this program worked with whole families education who has low literacy, low income, and it has to be within Hudson City School District. That was Hudson Literacy. Different even state has different criteria. Our criteria was you have to be low literate, at least any literacy need in the family, either husband, wife, children, anyone in the family has to have literacy need and low income and live in the Hudson, within the Hudson City School District. So our job was, at the beginning we were just home-based program. We're doing home visit. At home, we are providing early childhood education, parent-child interaction activities, parenting education, and adult education. There are four components of that.
What was the last one you said?
Adult education. Mm-hmm. Four components of the program. So at the beginning, we were like just home-based. Then gradually, when they were going to ESL class, we were doing child care for them. Mm-hmm. So then we became a early childhood class. We start our own early childhood classroom because we have all the children anyway. Mm-hmm. So we start our early childhood classroom and we have our own ESL class. Then we realized that the parent cannot help with their. Mostly immigrant people are in our program. We have Chinese, Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Yemeni, Haitian, Spanish. Mm-hmm. We have some American too who drop out from the school to help them to get their GED. So not many American state, but immigrants state. Some families started when we started. They are still in our program. They have 4 or 5 children. They all enrolled in our program, getting help in some way. we have so we realized they cannot help their, even though it's first, second grade level homework, they know the stuff, but they don't understand English.
Hmm.
If you explain to them, they can help them. Mm-hmm. But when they read it, they don't know how to do. So we start our after-school program where we help our children with homework. Mm-hmm. And summer, during the summer, school is closed, so we have summer camp. In summer camp, we have some fun activities. We also have educational activities. Each year we do a theme and we learn about that theme, on that theme, and write. This year we had just ended our summer camp yesterday.
Oh.
Theme was journalism. So we divided them in groups, like actual newspaper have sports, cooking, VIP, fun fact, and events. So those group, we set appointment with many different people. We took them with us, and they interviewed them, come back, and write the report. And we did the. They come up with the name and like a newspaper, actual newspaper. They made newspaper, weekly newspaper.
A weekly newspaper.
Weekly newspaper. The whole week, wherever they went, whoever they interviewed, all they put it in paper. We have editors, they were typing on the computers. So that was fun.
That's a really good project.
Mm-hmm. So we had about 30 families in our program. We also have a teen advocate. We are family advocate. We have 4 family advocates. It has... some of them work in early childhood classroom. They have lesser caseload. I don't work in early childhood classroom. I have more caseload.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we divide our caseload. And we have a teen advocate. She works with teens to help them with, keep them in school, finish their education, help them with their college admission, make them involved with many different activities so they can stay in school. That is her job. Altogether, we are 4 advocates, 1 office assistant, and program director. 6 of us run the program.
Wow.
And we are part of Columbia Opportunities, the community action agency. We are a partnership between Harrison City School District and Columbia Opportunities. We are employed by Columbia Opportunity, but housed in schools.
Okay.
School provide us with phones, computers, and space. We are employed by Columbia Opportunities.
How... With the kids or with the families that you work with,
mm-hmm.
how do you feel the Hudson school system? Do you think that the Hudson school system is successful at
Hudson City School is very, very, very appreciate our program, because whoever enrolled in our program, they are doing very well in school. And the kindergarten teachers are saying, oh, yes, such and such in your program. We didn't have any trouble to get they didn't feel the transition as a kindergartner, as a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
We helped them, we made them ready for kindergarten. And the 4th, 3rd, 5th grader, we're helping with homework at our place. They are very cooperative. School is very cooperative with us. They provide bus transportation from other school to... We are housed in the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So transport children from other school to elementary for after school. And during the summer, they keep the school open for us. For have summer camp, have custodian for us. So school... we are partner.
Mm-hmm.
So their school is very, very cooperative with us.
What do you feel is, how do you feel, I guess I want to kind of get a sense of all the various communities within Hudson. Do you find that... I would love to get a sense from you specifically of the various dynamics and networks within Hudson with all the different communities.
I think it is... since the Hudson has many different groups, they are very open and acceptable towards the other people. Mm-hmm. I think they're very acceptable.
But are there? Do you find that there's a lot of cultural outreach within Hudson? Like, are there a lot of institutions or organizations or outreach programs or community endeavors that accommodate all the different communities and the community at large?
Actually, they are trying now, not really for opportunity for every culture, but they are trying. Like radio station, I got involved in radio station. We have a Bangladeshi show. Last year we started the Bangladeshi cultural fair. We're doing this year too. So these are the city people and other people now accepting, and they are encouraging us to do it. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that opportunity before. And another thing is, not only people outside the community, people within our community doesn't want to take active role to do it. So that's another reason. They want to stay together within their own community. They don't want to go out. So we need people who can really showcase our culture to other community. So last year, a young man, his name is Ronnie, he first get the proposal, we can do it. So I said, okay. So he doesn't have that many outreach. I have a connection. He doesn't have that much connection as I do. So basically within 3 weeks, we planned and we did that cultural fair. It went, in my view, it went well. This is the first time we did. City helped us with, they waived our insurance, and the city helped us with that too. So this year we received funding from city to make it better. And I think that money we didn't receive yet, but they gave in a wrong check. We didn't cash it from Galvin Foundation. We received money for our fair too. So this year we'll do it in elaborated way, bigger.
What were the things that you did in last year's festival?
Last year's festivals, we had music. We did a small drama on our independent noir. Mm-hmm. And we did fashion show. We had food stall. So this year, same thing, but we're trying to get professional singer. Last year we did local boys and girls did whatever they could. This year we're trying to get professional singer from New York City, and dance and music and fashion show again. People like the fashion show a lot. So,
when does that usually take place?
September 2nd.
So Labor Day.
Labor Day. Okay. Yeah. Labor Day weekend. Yeah, mm-hmm. September 2nd. Yeah, in the Riverfront Park.
Okay.
We are in city event list now. So.
Is Ronnie also the man that you do the radio show with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the title is the Bengali show, right?
Bangla show.
The Bangla show.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me the difference between Bengali and
Bangla? Bengali is the English for Bangla.
Okay.
Bangla is the language. And English is Bengali.
Mm-hmm.
So Bangla show.
And how long is that? How long have you guys been doing the show?
1.5 years at least, I think. Yeah.
And what kind of stuff do you cover on the Bangla show?
Usually we play music from the from YouTube. I have some CD, and we have one person, his name, he's my co-host too. His name is Sharifullah Alam. He can sing, so he sings sometimes. He cannot come on regular basis, so sometimes he sings. And I read poem. I like poem. I read poem pretty much every week. I have a big poetry book. I read poems, and sometimes we get people and interview them, ask about their experiences. If someone new or someone come from another city or something, we interview them. This kind of, and some news sometimes.
So. Do you find that to be? How is the radio show for you really important? Do you really enjoy it, or?
Yeah, I enjoy it, and I like to know the future generation about our culture, get them involved. That's why I make Ronnie involved. Ronnie just came to see what's going on. I put him on the microphone, and he likes it too, and he is doing it on a regular basis, and he's trying to learn about. He came here about when he was 10 or 11 year old. Mm-hmm. He wants to learn about our culture too. He's very, very interested. So in this, he was saying, in 1 year I learned a lot about our own culture. If I wouldn't involve with you guys, I didn't know that much. Mm-hmm. So I like to involve the future generation know about our culture. That's my personal goal. Eventually I will sit back when they are ready to do their show by themselves.
And how do you what are your thoughts about the radio station WGXC? Because were you involved from the very beginning?
Yes, I still a team member of the radio council. Yeah, I was involved from the very beginning. At the beginning, I thought that voluntarily we may not do it, but it's happened. It's going well. Yeah, it's my view changed. I thought it's not going to happen. The people in Kherson is doesn't have a lot of money. I didn't think that people going to contribute to run the radio show, but it is running. It's running, and I think it will do better in future.
Do you feel like in the year and a half to almost, is it almost 2 years that they've been on?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see it having a strong role within the community?
That I'm not sure, really. I don't really talk about radio within the community much.
Okay.
But I don't know. But we are growing listener, that I know. So I don't know how strong role in the community, I'm not sure about.
Do you, because you're on the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you were to project a little into the future, what would you ideally like to see with the radio show, with the radio station?
About just Bangla show or overall?
I guess whatever is important to you. I mean, definitely for the Bangla show. I'm curious for that.
So I like to see that we don't have any musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
When someone comes, sing without any instrument. I like to have someone can teach, like, grammatically correct music, like with the note and everything. Whoever it sings, they learn by, like, listening to the sing and song. It's not... So that on the radio, I don't really... But that's all we have in this community. It's a community radio station. I like to improve their singing ability, and I like to have someone who can teach proper way of singing and have musical instrument like a real radio station does. This is... We don't have all the So I hope that we eventually we have all the instruments and a group they can perform together. That's my ambition or thoughts about the radio station.
And also with your position with the literacy program. And what's the official title of that?
The Hudson Family Literacy Program. It used to be Hudson Evenstar when we were federally funded. When we lost our funding, we became Hudson Family Literacy Program. Now it running through various grant. So, and my title is Family Advocate. Advocacy for their education. So my title is Family Advocate.
And do you also have a lot of future goals for what you would love to see the family literacy program accomplish?
Family literacy program, what we think we accomplished a lot. For family literacy, my hope is we get funded and run this program and have more people. It is very hard, 6 people running the program. We do so many different things with only 6 people. So if we have funding, I like to have more people in the group who can run the program, like better quality tip service. Mm-hmm. So that's my thoughts about the family literacy program.
And also, you mentioned that the camp ended yesterday and that Ramadan started today.
Yeah, so that is the reason we had to end. Some of the older children passed. So this, during the summer, it is hard for them to go to camp. And plus, another staff is from Egypt. She passed, I passed. So that's why we shorten our camp this year. Usually we have 6 weeks. This year we had 4 weeks.
Could you tell me a little bit about Ramadan?
Ramadan is the one. Ramadan is the name of a month. Arabic month. It's Islamic calendar is follow the lunar year. So during the month of Ramadan, Muslim people fast for 30 days, a month, from sunrise to sunset. They cannot eat or drink or do anything cannot go into your body and anything cannot go out. If you bleed, then your fasting is not 100% correct. You can break the fasting if you throw out. You can break the fasting and you can make up for those days. And in like, if some woman is having period, she cannot fast. She can make up later on. So it is, you can, basic thing is you cannot put anything in your body, you cannot take out anything from your body. So that like whole total body fasting, no drinking, nothing, no smoking, nothing. It is to purify your body and mind. You one whole month you stay away from all kind of instinct, bad influence on you. You stay away from that purify your mind and your body too. When you fast, your stomach doesn't work hard and you burn your extra calories or things. And plus, to make Allah happy, that's order. You have to fast. This month, our holy book, Quran, came to the earth. So that's why this month is special for all Muslims. It's not only for Bangladeshi, all Muslims in the world. They make a special prayer at night before they go to bed. That's for this month only. We pray 5 times,
in regular time, but during the Ramadan there is another special prayer for, and get extra benefit because you are fasting plus praying extra, and so you are getting, and your all sin supposed to be forgiven if you fast and pray really with your heart and everything. And another reason to realize the hunger of the poor people who doesn't have food, how they feel. You realize you save your food. You're supposed to save your food and distribute to the poor people. At the end of the month, you're supposed to have distribute certain amount of money to poor people. Say you have 5 people in your household. At least 5 people can have and one good meal, that amount of money you have to give away. And if you have money in the bank or something, 2.5% of your money, or if you have jewelry, the money worth for the jewelry, 2.5% you have to give to the poor people. That's a kind of tax, Islamic way to paying your tax for the poor people.
Has your faith been with you your entire life?
I fast, yeah, but I think prayer, I don't pray regular anymore. After work, I feel tired, this, that, and the environment make you some way, like deviate a little bit from your faith, I believe. Because when I was in Bangladesh, that environment is totally different. You have mosque here, there, every prayer time, there is all azan is sounding in the microphone on the ear, everyone going for prayer. It make you feel, oh, I need to pray. Here, you are on your own. You have to convince yourself to pray on time. And so sometimes you feel lazy and don't do it. So I'd say my prayer is not as strong as it used to be in Bangladesh, my prayer. But I still fast. I don't break any fasting without any reason. You can break fasting if you are pregnant, you are not feeling well. But there are certain rules you cannot, like, you are forgiven, but you have to make up.
I just want to be sensitive with the time. There's 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. I can easily erase another file in there. But if we were to stay with the 12 minutes, mm-hmm. I would really love to talk to you a little bit more about, well, anything that you feel like you would like to talk, I'd like to give that priority. If there's anything within your history or the history of Hudson that you feel like is very integral to your own personal history?
The history of Hudson, I like to say that the UNISTAR program opened in Hudson, that changed my life a lot. I was very, very, very excited to get this job. And my personal story, I got my freedom in America so much. In Bangladesh, I had freedom. My husband never said you cannot do this, but usually Bangladeshi husbands are very, authoritative. Women doesn't have that much saying. They do whatever husband says. But I have that freedom. My husband is very open-minded. He let me do. He when I was married, I didn't finish my education. He let me finish my education. Most husbands would say, no, we don't need to finish. Take care of the family. That's all. And I became an independent woman. Basically, my husband wasn't here for most of my life in America. Mm-hmm. I did everything by myself.
So that I like a lot about that American life, that you can do what you want to do. In Bangladesh, even though if you want to do, you really cannot do it for the situation. But here, if you like to do something, you can accomplish that. That's my big experience moving to USA from Bangladesh. I accomplished something by myself. I didn't need any help. I could do it.
Do you go back to Bangladesh often?
I really don't. About 5-6 years after I went, last two times I went, like 2 years interval, because I went back. My son went to Bangladesh and he met a girl. He liked to marry her, so I went back for their wedding. And my daughter-in-law is here now. She lives in New York with my son. No, I don't really, because I have one income. I have to maintain everything. I cannot afford it. It is expensive to go back to Bangladesh. And plus time. My job doesn't really allow me to go for that long. They did, but they said, no, you cannot go that often for that long. I could save time for my vacation time, accumulate vacation time. Now I cannot save more than 1 week. So going for 1 week is not worth it to go to Bangladesh. Yep. The ticket is almost 2,000 round trip. So, and other expenses, you have family, you buy gifts for them, and when you come back, you buy gifts from your family, friends, so it is very costly. I don't go that often. Some people do when they have two income, they do. And they take their children to see their culture, learn about their culture. They take their children. My children are grown. They grew up in that culture. So, I don't know that often.
And I guess another question I have, I love to ask this one question, and if there's, and whatever sort of comes immediately to your mind, but is there a specific decision that you've made in your life that you feel like had a very large impact on you?
The moving to this country, that's a large impact on my life. I, like, mostly, even though I'm married, mostly lead the single life here. Yeah, that's a great impact. And my husband cannot do anything, and like he doesn't want to live a jobless life or something. He felt bad, or he doesn't really talk about it, but he doesn't want to come. He doesn't say anything. So that is a decision I made to come here, and my life is pretty much single.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great impact on my life.
And I guess maybe the last question I'd like to ask is, I've been here only a year, and I've noticed like a lot of changes within Hudson, and you've been here since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the way that Hudson is changing?
Yes,
you do.
I do. Yes, I do. It's not the bad things. It's growing. It's helping people. More job opportunity, and yeah, I like it. But something I don't like is like all the old buildings. We should preserve those things. Just breaking down the building, and those I don't like. But it's developmental work. Some development I like it. Of course, it's giving people more opportunity and more people coming. I like the development. Yes.
How do you feel about the interview? Do you feel like that your history's been properly recorded?
I didn't listen to it. So I don't know. When I listen to it, I will know how it's recorded. I might have some mistakes there because I'm an immigrant. I think English is my second language. It's not. Yeah, it is my second language. So I might have some mistake there. So are you going to edit the record?
Well, actually, the nature of oral history is that you leave everything in its entirety.
Okay.
But I think this is a completely, I mean, in terms of pronunciation, language, I think it's a brilliant interview.
Okay. No, if there is like information is not completed or something, so that you're going to leave the same way it is?
Yeah, but there's, I mean, the good thing about oral history is if there's anything you ever wanted to revisit on a future date,
mm-hmm.
That could always be done, and then it would be added. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think I pretty much said everything I know about her son. I don't really socialize much. I do my work, and maybe for job-related thing, I socialize with people, that's all. I don't think I know a lot. So I think pretty much what I know, I already told you. I just like to listen to the record,
mm-hmm.
say how it went, is there any mistake or anything. I like to make the correction.
Okay.
So.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Fantastic.